Let's see. We're going to continue this afternoon with Tony King. Tony has a really great presentation. I always watch it all the time, even though I've seen him before, because he's so chock full of tips and information. If any of you are ever in Utah, you can try to find Tony at the Family History Library in Salt Lake City. He likes to help out there or hang out there. And before we get started, I just want to point out Phil here from the New York Public Library and Sue. You're from the Milstein Division, right? Over at 42nd Street and 5th Avenue. They often give genealogy workshops, general interest genealogy workshops that are really terrific. I've taken them. And also, the division there specializes in local history as well as genealogy. So it's really worth taking a look there. And then also in the back, we have Justine Lee. Justine? Oh, he's right here. Justine is with Self-Evident, and they are collecting stories about where did you come from and how did you first figure out where you came from. And they do podcasts. It's a podcast. And so she's interested in talking to some of you and finding out your stories and if, you know, you'd like to do something for their podcast, something a little bit longer. And, you know, I really advocate for this. As we heard from Rochelle earlier, a lot of us didn't hear a lot about Asian Americans and Asian American history in school, and it's because a lot of our history is hidden. So I'm a real advocate of you doing your own genealogy, but not just keeping it to yourself and to your family. Try to get it out there. Try to get it into mainstream media and mainstream institutions because, you know, Chinese American history is American history. And, you know, if you don't tell it, it may not get told. And running up the aisle is Yin Kong from Think Chinatown. There's a flyer here that is a project that's being conducted right now. It's called My Archive 2.1, and it's an organization called Urban Archive. They're asking for people to submit photographs of your family and locations in New York and to submit stories about that photograph. So, you know, make sure our Chinese American stories are represented. If you take a look at this flyer, the third photo from the left is my family in front of their laundry in the Bronx.
I remember when Amy and I actually were speaking in China last year, Henry said that Tony would be speaking on traditional genealogical sources and Amy on non-traditional sources. And when I really kind of analyzed and compared our two presentations, there's a lot of overlap. So what's traditional and non-traditional, I don't know. And there's even some overlap that we had with Henry's. And you'll find that throughout our presentations. But there's no harm in that because I think we give you a pretty good data dump. And to have some repetition on these things is good. I am Chinese American, third or fourth generation, depending on how you count it. Grew up very American, speaking no Chinese. I know some from personal study, and I've been at genealogical research now for a good 8 years or so in a serious way. And when I started, I knew very little. You know, I was like with Amy, just kind of starting out. And so we like to say, you know, use us as examples that if we can do this kind of thing, so can you, okay? And we've all been able to, I think, to enjoy some very good successes in our genealogical searches. People wonder, am I really Chinese, because they say, where'd you get your name? Does that come from Wang? Is it a Chinese name? And no, it's not. And so this will be a kind of a good introduction on the whole challenge of Chinese names, which again Patrick is really going to address in depth. But this is my Chinese surname. It's one spelled, you know, depending on what dialect you want to spell it, W-E-N-W-A-N-W-O-N, various ways. My grandfather immigrated in the late 1800s, 1881, to Portland, Oregon from Toisan. And his name in Cantonese is Wan San Jiao. Okay? When he immigrated, he became known as Sam Jower. Don't ask me how that came about. I figured, you know, maybe an immigration agent who didn't know the protocol of the Chinese order of names says, "What's your name?" Wan Sam Jiao, and he writes down Jower, and that, and he hears the Sam, and it becomes Sam Jower. Or, you know, many Chinese, when they came to America, wanted to Americanize their names, and so he could have done it himself. Many Chinese did that sort of thing as well. My grandfather was a tailor, and for working with white people, he thought it would be better to have an American name, and he tacked on the name King. That's how I became Tony King. Okay? And so, many times, you know, our surnames change, and when we're trying to search out our roots back in China, you really have to dig a little bit to find out, you know, what you're really after. Okay. I'd like to start with this cartoon that shows Adam and Eve. They're starting on their genealogical journey, and they wrote down their chart there. And, of course, Eve said, well, that was easy. I like to just show this because it allows me to coin a statement that I once heard, and that is that this work is not about charts, it's about hearts. And I think that's something that we should all keep in mind as we get involved in, you know, our collection of names or going after, you know, that Jiaopu in our village and, you know, trying to look at the many details that come along from this very detailed kind of study, that we shouldn't lose sight that we're really trying to make connections of the heart with our ancestors, you know, trying to find out about where we came from and about the lives of our ancestors so we can connect our lives with theirs and so we can pass that on to our posterity and so we can also connect with our living family and living relatives. And that's what been one of the great pluses, the great blessings of my experience is knowing who my family are around the world. I have, you know, tons of relatives now that I know in China that we stay in touch with almost daily on WeChat. Yesterday I was with a second cousin of mine who I never met until I started doing this research. He lives up in Fishkill, New York. And so it's just really a great, wonderful thing that I've had in my life to be able to connect with these relatives. Just pointing out again, as we get into our searches, you know, especially as we're looking for our immigrant ancestors who came to America, a lot of the methodology for doing genealogy is no different than anybody else who's, you know, searching through Ancestry.com or FamilySearch.org and that sort of thing. But again, this whole thing of Chinese names is something that can really trip us up. And so it's something to learn about and to pay attention to. Again, for the U.S. immigrants, and there's usually some unique aspect depending on what country you come from, that there's the record systems work differently everywhere. And we have a set of records that you've heard about already because of the Chinese Exclusion Act. We have this set of records that is unique here in the United States called the Exclusion Act files, the immigration files that are kept in the National Archives. And valuable, valuable resource for us. If you were in Taiwan, I would point you first to the household registration system in Taiwan. And that's where somebody from Taiwan would start. And that household registration system, where did it come from? It came from the Japanese Koseki system because the Japanese occupied Taiwan and implemented that system there. But they can go off and start and get, you know, four or five generations if they get a hold of that. Every place has a unique way of keeping records. And then the Chinese tradition of family genealogies, you know, the fact that the Chinese have been keeping genealogies for centuries is a great advantage that we have in being Chinese descendants. Okay, when you're starting out, you know, you may feel overwhelmed. What do we go after? What do we look for? And so there's just ways to kind of organize this in your mind by thinking of goals and strategies. You know, who are your ancestors? I'm trying to find that out. What kind of lives did they live? And so, you know, I'll emphasize this more and more. Start with you, yourself, and your own family. What exists in your own residence? What do your parents and your relatives know? You need to search for extended family members. And again, I really like Rochelle's presentation because, again, we're after, you know, getting these japus and these long strings of names that will connect us back to the Yellow Emperor, you know, 4,700 years ago. But we really need to concentrate on capturing the stories of our ancestors. I was just looking at a quick summary of a presentation that I saw, that I was reading. It said five things that genealogists need to do before they die. And the first one was tell your own story. And the second one is interview as many relatives as you can find. Okay. And the third is getting your information organized so that you can pass that down, and also to look at how to organize your images, all the photographs, you know, that you have in your possession. Anyway, records, what kind of records exist? Vital records, ship manifests, census records, birth records, death records. And then, of course, like I said, Chinese records. What are the keys to finding Chinese genealogy? So these are all the kinds of things that we're really after. I'm going to go over some resources today. Probably not all of these, but I'm going to talk about searching with your own family. The internet, I'm going to talk about a lot about family search, because that's what I'm most familiar with, but I don't want to exclude some of the other great resources on the internet. Family search, like I said, I'm going to concentrate on. I'll just mention vital records departments are where we used to go to get vital records because they didn't have the internet. So you had to go stand in line at the Department of Health and fill out an application and have them search through their records. But we're so lucky today to have the technology that we do. But there's still a lot of times you have to, once you exhaust the online searches, sometimes you actually do have to go to these vital records departments. Newspapers have been mentioned, and then we've mentioned archives. Okay, start with your own family. That's always my number one rule. In fact, when you come to a roadblock, my number two rule is come back to your family and look for a family member, because they always seem to have the best information. And what kind of things do you look for? You know, again, you're looking for that vital information that your parents or grandparents have on the dates and names of family members. You're looking for, you know, what's my surname? Mom, is King our real surname? it is for the United States, but as far as doing genealogical research, no, it's not. My mother's maiden name was Lee. Is that your real surname? Well, no, that's a paper name. Okay, their family really comes from the Chin family. Okay, what records does your family possess? Again, we mentioned these certificates of residence or certificates of identity that the Chinese who resided in the U.S. after the Exclusion Act was put in place, they all had to fill out and forms and have these Chinese certificates. And sometimes if you have those, it's a great document to have because that number can key to other places to search in the archives, for example. Where did my ancestors come to? Where did they land in America? Important thing to know, because that's important to know which U.S. archives to go after. Okay, if they're from Hawaii or San Francisco, those records are resident in the National Archives in San Bruno, California. If they came in to the East Coast, you're probably looking here in New York at the archives here. Okay, if they came in Southern California, it's down in Riverside. So, of course, Henry talked about villages and how important it is to find your village. What's the name of your ancestral village? It's key to your search. And then again, who are the important ancestors in your line? If you have some names of the important primogenitor ancestors called Shirdzus that Henry referred to, or there are other famous ancestors in your line, that can help you in your search. My mother passed away just a year ago, and at the age of 90, almost 94. And I've been spending the last year with my siblings going through a lot of stuff in my mom's house. She was almost a pathological hoarder. And I had to go through what I felt was mountains of things. But hidden amongst a lot of things like bags of junk mail that she decided never to throw out were these tidbits of information that I would find. And it turns out my mom was a lot more of a genealogist than I ever knew. One of the things that I found in the house were my dad's military records. You know, military files for the Army and Air Force, there was a big fire in Missouri in 1973 that destroyed almost 20 million records, personnel records. And, you know, I wrote off to them and tried to get my father's military records and nothing. They said, we don't have them anymore because of that fire. Well, here in some box, as I was cleaning out the house, was all of my dad's military papers that he saved. And you know, I have things like this appointment as a second lieutenant to the Transportation Corps. A letter that was written from the Army to the mayor of Portland as my dad was discharged. And just a number of other records. A year ago when I was doing this presentation in San Francisco, Corky Lee, who many of you may have heard of, who's a well-known photographer and activist, he said, you know, with what you found, there's a project on commemorating the service of Chinese servicemen who served in World War II. And he said, here, go to this website and put in an application. And I got this letter just a couple of months ago. It says, we're pleased to inform you that the Chinese American World War II Veterans Recognition Project, the Congressional Gold Medal Review Committee, has reviewed the records of Edward Jower King, my father, and have unanimously concluded that pursuant to this public law, a Congressional Gold Medal will be awarded to him in recognition of his dedicated service during World War II. And so this is happening this fall sometime at a ceremony in the Capitol building as a result of finding these papers and able to document his service. Again, this is an example. You can't read this, but these are some notes that I found, again, amongst just buried in a lot of different papers. These are notes that only I would have recognized. I'm glad I came across them because it wouldn't have meant anything to any of my siblings, not knowing our family history. But it was notes talking about her grandfather, who came from our village, Gene, in Tlongap area from the Huangtun. And anyway, here's a note that she made from that said, grandfather first went to Sydney, Australia. It was there when he heard from his nephew, who was already in America, asking him to come to the U.S. He returned to Hong Kong and Canton and then to America. First had a merchandise grocery store in Orphir, which is the old name for Oroville, California, with his nephews, and he mentions some names here who are the, that's Gwangyu is the great-grandfather of Diane Lam, another cousin of mine that I got to know. And they had a store there in Oroville, and I found, you know, this describing the whole thing. I never knew my great-grandfather had gone to Sydney, Australia, and that he ended up, again, as a goldsmith in Oroville, California. And I was actually, after I got this, I was listening to just about 2 years ago, I was listening to a tape that I had recorded of an interview that I had done with my mother and her older brother. And I never noticed this before, but my uncle described a photo of that he saw of my great-grandfather in Oroville. And he said the Oroville Chins had a copy of this, and he said they wouldn't give it to him. But he described him, and I didn't ever pay attention to this, but he described him as you know, having a black hat with these Chinese, you know, he called them pajamas, you know, the Chinese clothes with a cigar. And Diane Lam, this cousin who I met after doing this research, had given me this picture in front of the store of her great-grandfather. It was taken in 1895. And lo and behold, there is my great-grandfather in that photo. So you can see how the type of information that you may find amongst your family start to help you to build the stories of your ancestors. Okay? Look for photos. Look for anything that has Chinese writing on it. Okay? Especially in the backs of these photos. There's probably a lot more information than you know of. This is another book. I found a notebook that my mom had where she had recorded family information on each of the families. And you can't see this too well, but there it says Sam Jower, my grandfather, and that's his older brother who also came to Portland, Juan Jower. And here it has my great-grandfather's name, Juan Dao Chao, or Do Chao, or Dao Chu in Mandarin. And I had had this information, but I tell a story about how it took me a couple of years to go off and find my grandfather's village. And it took a couple of trips to China. It took me finding in the city of Xinhui, next to Toisan, a one-family scholar who I talked to, and he pointed me to another village in Toisan, a one-family village, said, go look at their genealogy and see what answers you can get. And in that book, their book, I was able to find a reference to one of my ancestors who, in about 1300, moved to an area called Dunjai. And that was what was the catalyst that helped me to find that village. Took me that much effort. Well, I'm looking at this book on this page, and up in the top it says village, Sunning, which is the old name of Toisan, Unjai, which is the Toisanese pronunciation of Dunjai. My mom knew it. She already had it. And I didn't know it. So anyway, just an example of the kinds of things you can find sometimes with your own family members. Okay. The internet. Like I said, tons of stuff on the internet. Don't forget the value of just doing Google searches. Okay? You can find a lot of information just doing Google searches. And there are tricks and tips. If you just Google tips on how to search, you know, Google, it'll teach you about, you know, what quotation marks do and what using the word or in between phrases do and that sort of thing. But use Google searches. Now, there's a site that I point out. It's genealogyintime.com. And what's good about this is a kind of a genealogy magazine that every year would rate the top 100 genealogical websites. Okay, so here, I point this out, and they haven't updated it for a number of years, but it's still a good place to go to because these are still current websites. They list 100 genealogical-specific websites for you to use. And you'll see some very familiar ones at the top, Ancestry.com, Find a Grave, FamilySearch, MyHeritage. And on the one side, they have links to to each one of them. Okay? So it's just a very convenient way to start going through and seeing what kinds of tools are out there. It also has a column there that says, these are free and these you have to pay for. Okay? Another good piece of information. Let me just say a couple of things before I get into Family Search. Some people have said, you know, which is the best to use, especially like with the big search engines, FamilySearch.org, Ancestry.com, MyHeritage, FindMyPast. Those are usually recognized as the four really big genealogical websites. And the answer to that is that you can't really make a comparison and rank them, because it's like comparing apples and oranges. And the truth is, you really need to go to a number of these to do your searches, and don't exclude and get wedded to just one. Each one has some different advantages. The Chinese collection that FamilySearch.org has is better than any other of these websites. Okay, the number, they've been collecting Chinese documents since 1971. But FamilySearch.org does not do DNA. Okay. The immigration records that you find in Ancestry.com are better than what you find in FamilySearch.org. So there's different reasons why you go to these different websites, and so don't exclude one over the other. You just have to, you know, try them out as you're doing searches. Searching through these is kind of an art anyway. You just got to kind of repeatedly try and see what works best when you're searching, and I'll show you some of that. But another reason why you want to search through them is a lot of times they all keep family tree information. People enter in family tree information. Some people use one and some people use the other. And if you're searching, you might find a family line in one website that's not in the other. So don't exclude some of these, okay? Okay, let me talk about Family Search, which is where I work as a volunteer. It was founded in 1894 as the Genealogical Society of Utah, and it was formed to gather, preserve, and share genealogical materials. In 1938, they began the microfilming of records, and in fact, they were at the forefront, you know, I can't remember which company it was, of microfilm technology. They've gotten away from that because the cost of microfilming has quadrupled in the recent years, and so now they're digitizing all of their microfilm records, and most of it is complete, except they continue to add records, and so they're still digitizing. Again, the Family History Library in Salt Lake City is a massive, probably the largest genealogical library in the world, 5 stories, number of records, but you don't have to come to Salt Lake to do research. I encourage it because there are some records that they have exclusively there that they can't share they don't have the permissions or the copyrights to share online. But there are almost 5,000 family history centers, around the world that Family Search maintains, and I'll show you how to find them. This is the FamilySearch.org homepage. Okay, that's the website that you go to, FamilySearch.org. And if you go, it used to be very easy. They had it on their homepage at the bottom. Now you got to kind of search a little bit to get to finding these places. But there's a little help button up there that when you click on that, a menu comes down. And there's the third one says Contact Us, okay? And when you click on that, you can find here, it says Find a Family History Center. So I've put in here New York City, right there. And when you click on that, it comes up with, there's little green symbols that is the family search tree of where there are family history centers or Family Search affiliate libraries. And actually, this shows you right here on Columbus Avenue that there's a family history center there, and it gives you the hours, it gives you a phone number of when you can go and contact them. They have researchers, not too many specialized in that facility in Chinese research, but they can help you with the searches. You can also get, you know, to ancestry.com for free at these centers as well. And there are a number of affiliate libraries. The Jewish Center for History here in Manhattan is an affiliate library, is on the map here. And so you can get to affiliate libraries that give you the same kinds of services here in Manhattan. Yep, the New York Genealogical and Biographical Society, which is just around the block on 44th Street, is another affiliate library. Okay? Okay, let me talk about FamilySearch.org and how to use this a little bit for finding records and, again, trying to piece together the stories of your ancestors. How am I doing on time, by the way? Are you kidding me? Does that count all the announcement time? Anyway, let me keep going. Okay, ways to search it. There it is, the tab at the top that says search. I'm going to point out that there's a number of things that you can call upon and under the search button. And one is the research wiki, and that's the Family Research Wiki, which is just a place that you go to put in topics or places. This is good, like I said, every records system in every different place is different, even in different states. And so if you plug in California, for example, it comes up with a California page on how to research. Okay? If you put in New York, it'll tell you about New York records. And it'll even have links to online searches with New York records. Okay. Let's go to search again. To search records, here is the page. When you hit search, it comes up with a section over here. Let's ignore this for a second. Searching historical records. These are records that are indexed. In other words, somebody has taken a census record and they've digitized all of those records. So now when you enter information, it's like Googling all the holdings, and those records will pop up. If you put in Chinese characters to search for the Chinese collection under this, you will not find anything. You'll have zero hits because this is mostly for Western records, because we just haven't gotten to the point where we're indexing Chinese records to any great extent, and there's great complications in doing that. Okay, here I put in my maternal grandmother, Kim Yuk Chi, born in Hilo, Hawaii, and I put in a range of dates, 1902 to 1904. And here's the kind of results that you get, okay? You have to do a lot of work on this just because, you know, you might get 1,000 results that may or may not belong to your ancestors, so you have to corroborate this kind of information. But this first one here at the top, Kim Yuk Chi, is my grandmother because I recognize the names of her parents. And that, when I click on that to open it up, it gives you an information page, and it gives you a film number, and I'm able to go to the, at the time it was not digitized, I had to go look up the film in the library, but this is now online, and that's my grandmother in 1921, okay, when she filled out a delayed report of birth in Hawaii. The reason is they didn't start recording birth certificates in the early 1900s when she was born. She was doing this in 1921 because there was an arrangement for her to marry my grandfather, who lived in San Francisco, and she was getting ready to go marry him, and so that's why she had to get some documentation to travel. Here's another document that came up in my search. Somebody was asking about ship manifests. This is a typical ship manifest, and this was in 1922, March, when my grandmother was traveling to go to San Francisco. And here it says at Honolulu on the SS Matsonia, March 8th, 1922. I think she was married 5 days later to my grandfather, who she had just met. And there's her name. She actually had an American name, Rose Chi. And also it lists John Apai. It's actually Biao, a Biao. That was her oldest brother, and he accompanied her on the trip to San Francisco for her wedding, which I never even knew. And in fact, when I examined this photo of my grandparents' wedding, standing in the background here was her older brother. Okay? So again, like I said, you start to put together the stories of their lives. I searched for a friend of mine whose grandfather was named Han Dong. He went to Butte, Montana. And I tried to do some research. They had five kids. He said, this one, Earl, you'll have a hard time on because he died early and we can't find anything on him. But those are the five kids. I did some quick searchings and I used this one just to, again, show you that you have to play around with searching when you're doing Chinese names. Okay, so I put in Hang as the first name and Dong, which is the surname. Okay, and then I started to get records. And one of them was really funny. The child's name here, here's the reference, spouse and child, Ling Dong William Hang. I said, that's odd. William I recognize, okay? Why he has this, the Dong and the Hang in there, I'm not sure. But, you know, Hang Dong, they have it listed, again, Dong being the surname, they have it listed in Chinese order. I found many records, by the way, and again, part of the corroboration process is this Dr. McSpetters was common to all of the records that I found, and also their address. But anyway, you can see here how some indexer looked and said, Ling Dong Hang William. What do you do with that? How do you list that name? And in fact, this is not actually an S. You can see the similarity there. It's not an L, but they listed it as Ling just because that's the best they could read it. So anyway, again, if I was searching just on William Dong, you can see how there'd be problems in identifying him in records. I started to see more records with not Dong as the surname, but Hang, which is the first name. And so I started searching with Hang in the surname field, and records started to come up. Mary Hang. Here, the name got reversed, Dong Hang. How easy can that be to happen? You know, you're getting interviewed, you just had a kid. What's your name? Dong Hang. You know, he says it in Chinese order, and so it gets recorded that way. Searching for Hang, I found something called a child that was born called Month Hang. I don't know where this name came from, but when I looked at the order of the births and the years they were born, I figured out that was Earl. Earl Dong. Okay, he was named Month Hang on this record. And here I found under Earl Hang the death certificate of this young boy. So again, play with these names. And because, again, as you'll find out, Chinese names have different spellings because of different dialects, or it was recorded just as somebody heard it. And there's confusion over the order of names. So there's a lot of ways that you have to play with these Chinese names to be able to try and find the records you're looking for. This is a search in Ancestry. Because like I said, immigration records I thought was better in Ancestry. And again, one of the tips on works the same. Sometimes on this you want to be less specific than more specific, that you get more hits, okay? Like if you have the name of, you're searching for the name of a child, if you just put the name of the parents in, sometimes it'll, or if you're vice versa, if you know the name of a child but and you're searching for the parents, you know, you put the child's name in. You just got to play around with it. Here, I just put the last name of Jower to see what I'd get. Okay, and I put that they arrived in Seattle, Washington. And I got a hit. It said Mrs. San Jower. And I got this immigration record that really disturbed me because this is a arrival ship, this ship here, in 1910. Well, my grandfather's wife, my paternal grandmother, didn't come to marry my grandfather until 9 years later. So I'm thinking, did my grandfather have another wife that I did not know of in 1910? And I was really confused about this. And so, again, this is kind of how you have to dig into this record. Here's Mrs. San Jower, wife of a merchant, okay, 42 years female. And then it listed two more Sanjauers. And I thought this was my grandfather because that was the name of his store, the National Manufacturing Company. And in fact, you know, there it is. That's his business card, National Manufacturing Company, and Sam Jower King proprietor. Okay. He had an older brother who came 10 years earlier, Juan Jower, the owner of the Jower store in St. John's. So as I looked back more closely, I said, what are these numbers? CI 18916 and CR 43576 and somebody else, another Jower, San Jower, with another number, just differing by two. Well, this I had gotten from a granddaughter of my grandfather's older brother, and this is the wife of my, this is my aunt, the older brother's wife, and this number here matches her number on that line, on the information line. So I cleared up the confusion. It was not another wife of my grandfather. It's my aunt. And in fact, when I looked at these, this is a certificate of identity number. This is a certificate of residence number. When I looked at these, here's my grandfather, 578. Somehow the National Manufacturing Company got attached on that document to his brother. But this is my grandfather's certificate of residence. And that number matches. And so there's a certificate of residence for his brother that's two numbers different that is out there somewhere. I got to try and find. Okay. Another way to search family search is that there are collections that you don't find searching in here. If you click on Browse, Publish Collections, you'll start to find various collections that you can also search under. And this is good because it's in alphabetical order. You can search by state. You know, here's California immigration registrations for Japanese, Filipinos, and Hawaiians, the California Marriage Index, etc. Some of these are searchable when you get into it. Some of them you just have to browse page by page. Okay? But that's another valuable area of searching. There's a way to browse the catalog. The Family History Library used to be like any other library. They used to have index cards that you went in and you looked through drawers to find things. This is the automated portion of that. The good thing about this is that you can search the Chinese collection putting in Chinese characters. Okay? It's a little more difficult because, again, some of us don't know Chinese. Okay? You got to get some help on how to enter Chinese characters. But here I put in China, Guangdong Province, Taishan County. And to see what I would get, and there's a whole list of different resources, books or genealogies. In fact, there's a book by some guy that it came up, some guy named Henry Tom, that is in our library. Okay? Just again, staying on the internet for a second, Henry's already mentioned these things, the village database for finding villages, which again came about as a result of the Chinese Exclusion Act, the American Consulate in Hong Kong put together a database of villages that they were encountering trying to catch immigration fraud, okay? And that eventually was taken over by the Friends of Roots program and is available online for our research purposes. The Chinese Genealogy Forum, which is a very valuable resource, I list there. This is just another one I always like to list. The late Him Mark Lai, who is known as the Dean of Chinese American Studies, he has an archive that has wonderful information on China, the history and geography of China, and especially the history and geography of the Pearl River Delta. Okay? Amy mentioned newspapers. Newspapers is a valuable site. I'm going to kind of skip over an example of how I found a brother of my grandmother who was drowned in Hawaii that I couldn't find any records on, but I'll skip over that. And I'll just mention, lastly again, archives are a great place, a great valuable resource, and not just the National Archives. You know, there are archives at every level. I've been to archives in Taishan, the Taishan Archives. I've been to the Guangzhou Archives. I've been to up in Canada where my grandparents got married, I went to the Nanaimo Archives, which is just a little room, and there's papers strewn all about, but found some valuable information there. The main thing with the National Archives, first of all, I always say come prepared, because they will let you look at materials, but they don't let you take them. So, you know, bring a scanner or a camera or however it's best to copy things. That's my own grandfather, my maternal grandfather, his record. And that's another picture of a different grandfather, great-grandfather, who I found a big file on. So that's just a valuable resource, is finding these records in the National Archives on immigration files and others. This is, again, my grandparents that got married in Canada. I was able to find their marriage certificate up in Victoria, Canada, in the Royal British Columbian Archives. So they're a valuable resource. When you hear this Pauline Brandmeier, her story is amazing on how she found her ancestry going to many different archives. So it's just a valuable resource.